Americans know that attempting to influence witnesses to testify untruthfully presents very serious concerns.
And we end with Donald Trump's former national security advisor, General Mike Flynn, who supported Trump's efforts to overturn the election. During Tuesday's hearing, the House committee aired excerpts of its video deposition with Flynn, who repeatedly refused to answer questions from House Committee Vice Chair Liz Cheney.
Do you believe the violence on January 6th was justified morally?
Take the Fifth.
You believe the violence on January 6th was justified legally?
Fifth.
General Flynn, do you believe in the peaceful transition of power in the United States of America?
The Fifth.
The Fifth, so said President Trump's former national security advisor, General Mike Flynn, in videotaped testimony. He was answering the questions of committee vice chair, Congressmember Liz Cheney. If you want to see the full surprise hearing yesterday that lasted about 2 hours with Cassidy Hutchinson, with various deposition testimony like Mike Flynn, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 7:59 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Rowland.
Good morning, everybody. Glad to be back with you. I am Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO. I just thought good old Neil Young and Rockin' in the Free World would be somehow appropriate. With everything that's been going on, it has been quite the week. I am here by myself, and many of you probably just finished listening to extensive excerpts of the testimony of Cassidy Hutchinson, which I watched almost in its entirety yesterday. I'm sure a number of you did too. So I'm sure you'd probably like to be talking about that. It's pretty damn dramatic. And I would be surprised if significant amounts of her testimony were contradicted or not corroborated by other sources. Sounded pretty compelling to me. I'd be surprised if the committee hadn't done its due diligence on most, if not all, of what she talked about, since they had already interviewed her extensively, as you could see by them including clips from her previous tape testimony. All right, before we get into all that, and of course there was the Supreme Court, multiple terrible Supreme Court decisions. Of course, the one that affects so many people, the Roe v. Wade overturning. I don't know, just dark days upon us, but who knows what's going to shake down out of this these hearings. Anyway, I just wanted to, following up on last week's show on Colombia, and in light of the horror of the Mexicans and Central Americans who died in that truck in San Antonio. On June 27, 1954, the United States backed a coup against Jacopo Arbenz, the progressive democratically elected leader of Guatemala, because he sought to restore land to small farmers and indigenous communities that had been dispossessed by the United Fruit Company and other multinational corporations. And he was replaced by decades of brutal U.S.-backed regimes who committed widespread torture and genocide. And, of course, that didn't just happen in Guatemala. The brutal continuation of the Monroe Doctrine and its cynical usage in counterpart to the Soviet Union's extension of control over much of Eastern Europe, this brutal Cold War that led to such horrible results for all of us, and continues today, I assert, in the Ukraine War, which I believe might well have been able to be avoided if the U.S. hadn't been Biden and his top advisors, hadn't been still so caught up in the mental framework of Cold War militarism. Anyway, that's something I've talked about on this show by myself and with guests. I also wanted to mention, in case you're not aware, that climate change is roaring ahead unabated. Temperature records are falling across the globe. More global heat records have been broken from the Arctic to Japan. 104.4 degrees Fahrenheit, 40.2 degrees centigrade, the high temperature in Isasaki, Japan, about 50 miles northwest of Tokyo on June 25th, set a national heat record for the month of June. 97.2 degrees Fahrenheit high temperature for Tokyo on June 26th tied the city's hottest temperature on record. 111.6 degrees Fahrenheit high temperature on Saturday in Lingshao in Hebei Province, China, was the all-time hottest temperature on record there. Two dozen other stations set all-time records, too. The latest heat waves come soon after other noteworthy events in the U.S., Europe, and even the Russian Arctic. The city of Norilsk, Russia, had its hottest June day on the 23rd when the temperature hit 89.6 degrees Fahrenheit. And all of this heat precedes July, typically summer's hottest month in the Northern Hemisphere. And, of course, my argument regarding Ukraine war, the continued tensions with China, with Russia, is just that these are not just distractions from the primary threat facing the globe today, which is global heating, but that the continued militarization is one of the, if not the, one of the primary causes of climate change. And if we don't get global militarism under control, we don't stand a chance, folks. And like I said last week with my guest from the Institute for Policy Studies, we need to start here, to the extent that we, the people, are actually have a voice in the our government. We need to turn around our own foreign policy, and we need to start now in this hemisphere. Okay. Yeah. Italy hits record June temperatures as another heat wave sweeps Europe. Scorching temperatures have again swept across parts of Europe, with many locations in Italy among those setting June or all-time records for heat. Surpass 104 degrees Fahrenheit across much of Italy on Tuesday. Rome tied its hottest temperature on record, while several other cities set monthly records. Record warm temperatures persisted overnight across a large chunk of Eastern Europe. The heat comes during one of the countries that's Italy's worst droughts in decades, and as authorities are rationing water. And of course, we suffered terrible heat across the Southwest just in the past month, and the drought from the California eastward across the Southwest is continuing, along with early terrible forest fires in New Mexico. And finally, record heat is to scorch Alaska to start July, 20 degrees above regular temperatures. Where my brother lives in Fairbanks, the temperature is set to hit an abnormally warm 87 degrees this Friday, a temperature that exceeds the forecast high in Atlanta, where a comparably cool 82 degree high is forecast on the same day. Okay, yes, the news is very, very bad on that front, and we, to the extent that we can actually do anything about it, we need to seriously keep that in mind. So as I said, I listened to that hearing, watched the hearing on CNN and occasionally on Fox. I was a little surprised that the, you know, they had Fox actually started out by not airing the hearings for, I don't know, if the first one, two or three, I didn't follow it that closely. And then obviously they were getting, and then they actually apparently didn't air any advertising during it to attract viewers, because so many people were actually tuning in. And then apparently they just gave up because they're probably getting whacked in the ratings. And, you know, everything's driven by ratings on TV. And so now they're airing it, and they're actually, you know, turned it over to their relatively a moderate, I guess, sane voices of the news department, who actually are doing a fairly standard analysis of it, you know, leaning rightward, always, you know, different from other stations' coverage. I didn't really get it, you know, I only watched just smattering of it, but they obviously have forced to make a choice on that, which I think is interesting. Of course, then you've got, actually, Tucker Carlson wasn't on either Monday night or Tuesday night. Oh, it was last night, because the hearing was yesterday, of course. So I don't know what that was about. But Hannity, Sean Hannity, I just caught for just a couple minutes. How can one stand to watch Sean Hannity or Tucker Carlson for more than a few minutes at a time? Anyway, he was just doubling down on minimizing, deflecting, denying the importance of these hearings and calling into question her testimony. I guess one of the main things that in the first few minutes is all I watched, he was hanging his hat on, was that someone tweeted, I can't remember who it was, it's a former Trump official, I believe, maybe it was a lawyer, tweeted that the Secret Service agent, the special agent in charge, whose name I can't remember right now, who was driving that the beast, as they call the presidential limo, And Trump apparently, according to Hutchinson, tried to take the wheel and then lunged at him after he took his hand off, according to the testimony, that apparently former Trump official tweeted that her testimony is going to be contradicted by that Secret Service agent himself and others. So we'll see how that plays out. Of course, that even if that does occur, it won't negate the rest of the testimony, but it will be interesting. I don't know. It seems to me like a desperate holding, trying to hold off the inevitable to me, that little move by Hannity and the rest of his shtick. Anyway, I don't know. I don't hold out great hopes. I'm not quite in the camp of Chris Hedges, who wrote an article last week or a couple weeks ago saying that he thought it was just basically a dog and pony show, that it was all spectacle and that nothing was going to come out of this. That might end up being true. I mean, Hedges and the rest of us certainly have a basis for cynicism in the ability to actually rein in the out-of-control corrupt elements in both the corporate world and the government world. And, one question I have as I sort of morph into actually talking about this and inviting you to call in and talk about this or other things. There's lots of things going on. 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. That's the studio here. I'm live in the KBOO studios. Question I have is why didn't the House in its impeachment hearings right after January 6th, why wasn't it able to find out some of the stuff? I know, you know, sometimes it takes years for stuff like this to come out. And also Hutchinson, I think, was not necessarily a really forthcoming witness right off the bat. I mean, there's just a lot of reasons why one would be reticent to expose oneself to the spotlights and the world scrutiny and the ire of her, you know, former colleagues and other fellow Republicans. One could certainly understand that. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons why this information didn't come out. But a question does I'd like to hear from them. I haven't, maybe some of you caught some of them talk about it. I heard Adam Schiff was on CNN last night giving his analysis. And I don't think anyone asked him that question. You know, it's not a heavy-handed criticism that I'm making. It's just a question. You know, were they in too much of a hurry? I guess they had to do it while he was still in office. No, that's not true. Anyway, my memory is such that I sometimes start saying things that I'm not totally sure about in the end, by the end of the sentence. Anyway, so that's a question. Why weren't they able to get to some of these witnesses? You know, did they not, maybe, yeah, they've said themselves, some of the members of the committee, actually, as Adam Schiff himself, it was him saying this, that the only reason they're able to find some things out is because they hear things and then they're able to ask those questions to witnesses that they call. If they don't actually ask the questions, the witness may not want to go there or may not even think of going there. So it's sort of an accumulative process. And I think it's going to be really interesting, the next hearings coming up, which are going to get into the real nitty-gritty of the what went on in the Willard Hotel war room. That was one of the more salacious things that came out that I mean, you can only call him the evil Giuliani at this point. I mean, what a poor, pathetic figure. But, I mean, he had such a major role in this whole thing that it's now coming out that how central a role. But anyway, Giuliani and apparently Meadows didn't go there to the Willard at the urging of this young, I mean, she was only 24 years old at the time all this was going on. This Cassidy Hutchinson, I mean, imagine being thrust into this position. Anyway, so this Willard, there's at the Willard Hotel, an old kind of grand hotel in Washington, D.C., downtown, where, you know, a lot of luminaries have stayed. Anyway, they had a hotel room there where that they ended up calling the war room, where they're actually planning for this January 6th. Giuliani and all the other names don't spring to mind right off the bat. I guess Roger Stone, of course, another evil figure. I mean, I don't like using that word evil. I don't know. For some reason, just sort of, I mean, these twisted, demented figures at the leadership is all starting to come out. How very similar, you know. I mean, John Dean is so often now a commentator on CNN. They call upon him. And of course, they had that whole four-part series or however much on Watergate, where he was a central figure going, both at the time, of course, he was a central figure giving testimony on Watergate. He's the one who really broke ranks and really broke the whole thing wide open. And then now he's still alive and still a major media figure, talking to him about that. And he's been making these parallels, obviously, between the January 6th and the whole Trump White House and the Nixon White House and Watergate. And it just makes you really see a parallel, a real strong parallel, because he was a young man. I think he was actually in his 30s, which was extremely young for his position at the time. And this young woman, Cassidy Hutchinson, and both of them, it's like they were confided in by these, as I said, these kind of twisted leadership, Haldeman and Ehrlichman mainly, in the Watergate, and in her case, obviously Meadows and some of the others surrounding Trump. But it's just amazing that a person so young was really thrust into a central position of all these goings on, and was entrusted with so much information. Turned out to obviously, perhaps, end up be a big mistake for them that she was. But they were sort of relying on her to sort of be sort of a guiding voice almost, and that she was thrust in the position to have to, you know, call off, you know, Meadows from going to the war room and you know, exposing himself to, you know, great legal peril and moral peril from her perspective, apparently. And now, you know, she's being put in this position of being a central figure and sort of re-exposing a lot of the inner workings of the White House. Quite extraordinary. Anyway, I haven't enticed anyone to jump on the phones right off the bat and call. But like I said, you know, there's lots of things we can talk about. The Supreme Court, which of course now is heavily weighted to the extreme Christian right, thanks to a very non-Christian Donald Trump, who is the sort of person who ended up making January 6th happen and being the sort of person that, you know, was almost inevitable that he would engage in such things, like, you know, the allegations of his violent behavior, his terrible temper, his terrible ego, etc. And he's the one who weighted this court so far to the right, and now they're the fruit of those decisions and actions are being born as we speak. So yes, 503-231-8187. Don't make me just sit here and talk at you all by myself. I can start reading articles here. I've got some really interesting ones, actually. Oh, it looks like the phone lines are lighting up. 503-231-8187. I've got just under 40 minutes left. Try to make your calls early if you can, and don't wait till the last 10 minutes of the show, please. So as I wait for that person to come on, see who they are. I have an article from the intelligence are the most explosive revelations from Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony. For those of you who maybe didn't listen to Democracy Now! Or follow them on the air, the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers were mentioned during White House planning for January 6th. Hutchinson testified that in the days leading up to the Capitol riot, she started to feel scared and nervous. I too thought that was a very important moment about the potential for violence on January 6th and became concerned about the planning going on at the White House. Quote, I recall hearing the terms Proud Boys and Oath Keepers when Rudy Giuliani was around, Hutchinson said. Of course, the one who was helping to run this war room at the Willard Hotel. It does really seem like that they really were planning this thing. You know, it started out from, you know, just seeming like this huge mob. I mean, maybe I'm sure there's people out there listening to this who had a pretty good inkling that this was a much more planned thing. I guess looking back, you have to admit it was really difficult to think that could have come off the way it did without some really serious planning going on, including, as it's coming out, apparently really close to within the Trump White House, if not Donald Trump himself. Okay, so we do have a caller, again, at 503-231-8187. You can get on Stack right now. I'm here by myself, so there's three phone lines open. Barth, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. This is really a tumultuous time. It's so surprising that so much detail is coming out, and the nature of the details confirms some of our worst suspicions about the president, the ex-president, hopefully the never-again president. I think the most telling piece that I got out of the hearings yesterday was Trump wanting a better photo op with his rather thin crowd at the Ellipse because people were staying outside and not going through the metal detectors.
But wait. That's one component of it. But
the biggest revelation there is his statement that they're not here to hurt me. Let them in. I don't care if they have weapons.
Right. And so the implication that everybody's sort of going rampant with, and I think, you know, not without reason, is that he actually wanted them to have their weapons so then they could go to the Capitol with their weapons. That's a conclusion that can't be, you know, so firmly drawn at this point, but that's the conclusion that a lot of people are going to, for sure.
Well, I think the conclusion, the shorter takeaway, and it's not really a conclusion, is they're not here to hurt me.
Right.
Period.
Well, and that
exclamation point.
And that everybody's taking that to mean, but it's, I certainly don't mind if they hurt someone else. And that's, again, another conclusion that can't be firmly drawn, but it seems to be implied for sure.
Well, if he's exhorting people to come to support him to take back your country, and that
right.
the country doesn't, it won't exist if you don't use force, basically.
Right.
You know, and so the people that he's appealing to, broad spectrums of those people who have been horribly deceived by his incessant repetition of things that he knows not to be true, are, you know, everybody is saying, well, you know, if we don't do it, nobody will, and if he's not reelected president, then we're lost because the secret government has taken over, and so. I mean, I don't think that a lot of his followers are stupid. I did think that for a while, but I think that they've been just so thoroughly disheartened by the way things are going and whipped into a frenzy by this self-serving rhetoric, by this power-hungry, perhaps power-mad person. You know, and that person hasn't gone away, and this situation hasn't been resolved. But I think that evidentially, we are now moving into a different place. If even Fox is carrying the hearings, then perhaps the tide is beginning to shift a little bit.
Well, maybe the Murdochs are starting to hedge their bets a little bit. Any super wealthy people always hedge their bets, you know, put bets on other horses instead of just the one they've been. So yeah, I mean they certainly can't afford to. Let's think about this a little more. I mean, where are all the MAGA people going to be? I mean, you know, let's think of the worst case. The worst case scenario, obviously, he ends up in prison, which still seems fairly unlikely. You know, another scenario that people were talking about, I think around the time of the impeachment, was, you know, that he's just going to get on an airplane and go somewhere where they don't have an extradition treaty or something like that. I mean, that would really leave the whole America First contingent high and dry, since he would no longer...
twisting in the wind, I think, is
right.
The term there.
So, yeah, I mean,
if
just
he goes, they won't have anything to hang their hat on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the danger of a demagogic, you know, a single demagogic leader hanging your hat on one of them. Is, you know, it took decades for Mussolini to hang on that meat hook, unfortunately, and for right. Hitler to die an ignominious death in the bunker, and millions of people had to die, and we certainly don't want to go anywhere near there, do we?
Not if we can help it. But the other interesting, well, more like terrifying thing that was on Amy Goodman's show is some Republican person being elected or reelected with a Trump backer, and her having a big screed saying, you know, there shouldn't be any separation of church and state. The church should tell the state what to do.
Right, I just heard that too. Yeah,
not Boebert. In the Constitution, and so I'm sick of it. Well, hello, this is the real world out here. We're not all Christians. We don't believe necessarily the things you believe, and the country is not safe as a theocracy.
Well, that's why they see their world slipping away. And they fear and loss of control can lead to this kind of, you know, to wanting to impose total control if you can't have.
Right.
Yeah. And that seems to be what's happening. Certainly the ideology of the Supreme Court. Anyway, we don't have any callers, so I'll keep talking with Barth unless you call in.
I don't mind.
And call in and interrupt us at 503-231-8187. Not that I mind talking with you, Barth.
Well, we can ramble on for a long time.
We could.
One other thing that was on yesterday's program was the Supreme Court affirming the right of the football coach to pray on the 50-yard line. And oftentimes, I guess that his team joins him. But the thing about the quick flip that was brought up in yesterday's talk show is, if he had been a Muslim and brought out prayer rugs for everybody on the 50-yard line, would anything like this have happened?
Well,
and
come on.
If you can't say yes, then we don't have, you know, then you're not talking about religious freedom. You're talking about religious, not even tolerance, but religious promotion. And a specific religious promotion. And we know that the Supreme Court justices are broadly Christian and broadly right-leaning, but this is a specific declaration on their part. It's like a shot across the bow for much of America, and they've made a number of horrible decisions lately.
Well, it looks like all of a sudden we do have some more callers, Barth. So it's been...
They're tired of me. Thanks for your work. Hello, everybody out there. Send KBU some money and good day. Bye-bye.
All right. Yeah. So one thing before we go to Richie, I just wanted to put out there the, you know, this idea, this apparent occurrence, where you know Trump wanted to walk to the Capitol with his minions the whole time. I can't see him walking. It's a fair distance there from where he gave the speech on the Ellipse to the grounds of the Capitol. And you know, can you see Trump? Well, I guess he does walk the golf courses. I don't know, or maybe he always uses a golf cart. Anyway, I don't really care. But he's not, you know, the fittest person, I don't think. But I mean, could you imagine him walking all that way with the Proud Boys and the, I mean, like slapping each other in the back and, you know, giving the rebel yell and I don't know, or even, you know, even showing up, you know, in the presidential limo and being deposited there and giving a speech outside the Capitol. What an image. Anyway, I've been talking enough. Looks like Richie's up next. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good
morning. Bart left?
Yeah, go ahead.
Did Bart leave?
Yeah. We can only, yeah, we have one at a time. Go ahead.
Oh, he was a caller.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what that was. Okay. Well, I'm sure Bart's still listening, but I grew up in Portland, and in my high school, I won't say what high school I went to, but, well, actually, I don't care. I went to Franklin High School in Portland, and my teachers taught us about a lot of these, like, so-called conspiracy theorists, the things that a lot of Trump supporters are getting associated with, and through QAnon, that thing that was going around for a while for Trump supporters. And it's a real shame that nowadays if you question any secret agenda or secret power that may be trying to control our government, that all of a sudden you get categorized as a Trump supporter or a right-wing individual. Because I always thought that was, growing up in Portland, it was more of a liberal approach. Because when I was in high school, Bush and them were exploiting our tax dollars and basically working deals out with all their military buddies and spending our tax dollars on things like that. So you could see the line drawn with the Republican Party at the time, where like you could kind of see the seeping of corporations or really rich people seeping into our politics. And then you know, so the conspiracies were happening on the left side of society. We were calling out the right side for being in cahoots with the secret governments. And then the whole thing had slipped when Trump came out. And it's a shame that we have to associate being a citizen of the United States, questioning the validity of our government or who's in power, or whether there's rich people behind the scenes pulling strings. And because we make those questions, we have to be categorized into a political party.
No, I hear what you're saying. I you may not have caught my program last week, where I had on a guest whose family's from Colombia, and he's talking about the recent elections where a new left-wing government was elected in Colombia. And you know, if you look at the, as I said at the outset, the 2 days ago was the anniversary of the U.S.-backed overthrow of Arbenz, a democratically elected president of Guatemala, and the number of coups that were directly supported by the United States in Latin America, in this hemisphere, in the Caribbean, is just astounding. And so, yeah, I mean, the U.S. has been complicit, you know, sometimes openly, often covertly, many, many times. And that's, you know, if there's a deep state, as I asserted last week, and I'll say again, it's what's called the military-industrial complex, which basically continues regardless of which party has been in power. It's basically the permanent power that has been ruling, you know, corporate America and much of the world for much of last century and continuing, although now it's being challenged mostly by China. Putin puts in his attempt to challenge it as well, which is partly what's going on in Ukraine. No, I hear you. I hear you. And I, you know, I don't know what personal experiences you've had. Do people say that to you personally? They lump you in with the right wingers.
it's just happening. I feel like as I see it happening in a it's a feeling that's occurring, because a lot of the QAnon stuff that was being categorized QAnon were conspiracy theories that my friends and I were talking about before QAnon was ever even a thing.
Well, give me an example.
Well, okay, so one of those examples is the terminology, the deep state, and saying that there's a secret government. And that seems to be a relatively newer term. I mean, it might be an old term, but it's
right. But they've that's the brilliance of QAnon, of Q and those people, is they've co-opted that and made it. And now it's these, you know, Hillary Clinton, who, you know, has certainly been part of the military industrial complex, and her husband Bill for sure, but you know, but claiming that she's the part of the leadership of some satanic pedophile, it's like they've just taken it in this weird twisted direction, which is sort of like almost, it's so sensationalistic that it's like that, you know, once you go down that rabbit hole, there's really no coming back. And so many people have swallowed that, and they've lost their ability to have the kind of really coherent historical political analysis that was the basis of the progressive critique of power that you're talking about, you know, calling into
progressive critique of power. I like the way you put that. The progressive critique of power.
Yeah, and that's
it's got to be beyond the critique of power. At some point, the citizens have to understand that we might have to stand up to the power.
Well, of course, yeah. So,
I think it's kind of a disillusion, or it's kind of naive for people to think that somehow we might not have to defend our rights against our own government, that we might not have to forcefully defend ourselves against our government. And by me saying that doesn't make me a right wing or Trump supporter.
Right. Well, but okay. So here's my take on the question of. And it's evolving through time. And the idea that we can actually have a kind of a revolutionary overthrow of state power, like happened, you know, in Cuba, like happened in the Soviet Union, in Russia became the Soviet Union, like has happened in, you know, not that many countries in history. I don't know. I'm not sure that maybe in a small country, I don't see that happening in the United States. So I just don't see, and that's a long, long conversation. So, you know, what I think that some sort of more complex approach where you're not, you know, I think discounting the ability to actually work with progressive elements of established parties. It seems to be the Democratic Party seems to be the only possibility at this point. The Republican Party haven't been totally taken over by, you know, the QAnon types, the Trumpists. So, you know, I think there are elements. Looking at other countries like Colombia, and you know, there's this pink wave, they call it, that's been going on for several years now in Latin America, where there's a lot of progressive or leftist governments that have taken power, you know, and historically...
Well, hold on real quick.
Go ahead.
Hold on real quick. The left and the right wing are part of the same bird. And you even said earlier that it doesn't matter what party's in power, the military-industrial complex, industrial folks.
Well, yeah, but I don't consider the Democrats left wing. I'm talking about, you know, we have to get into a really lengthy discussion here of what we mean by our terms, for one thing. By left wing, I mean basically anti-capitalist, a critique of the private capitalist concentration of power, you know, which is exemplified by the corporate takeover of the political machinery in this country and others, and you know, fascism being sort of an extreme form where the basically the private capital power and the state power basically merge, you know, and So yeah, I consider myself, you know, basically a left winger with proviso. I consider myself a libertarian leftist, meaning I fundamentally don't believe that the nation state is a healthy expression of a popular of the way to organize ourselves socially, politically. I think that the nation state itself historically has been basically the outgrowth of colonization and empire. And I think that this is a really long discussion. So
now we're meeting common ground, because I totally agree with that. And this is where it doubles back to the conspiracies, and how, like you said, the empires have stayed in power, the colonists have stayed in power. They've changed their names, they've changed their flags, but it's still the same rich families who've been the commanding heights of the global economies, of commodity and military, and they stayed in power, and they just figured out different ways to disguise it more or less in society. And like you said, the structure of our government that we have now was originally engineered, and this is one of the conspiracy theories, which ain't even really a theory, but it was originally engineered to make it look like it was for the people, but it was really for the rich people. And so
I agree with that.
Most people don't remember that what happened with Occupy movement, where there was no racial tension between people as much then. I mean, within that movement, it was more about the working class versus the 1%. It was a lot about the 99% versus the 1%.
I don't know. I think there was a hiding of racial dynamics by people wanting to not really look at it. But that's a complex question. But anyway, I do have other callers here, Richie. I just want to say I think saying that the left and the right are always the same, I think, is a little dangerous, because I think if you look at, say, the Petro Marquez vice president of Colombia, and you look at what they're actually saying and what they're proposing, and if you look at some of the other leftist elected governments, and if you look at left-wing movements, what they're saying and what they fought for, I think just saying that they're all the same as the right wing, I think that does not do justice to what those movements have stood for and what they've accomplished in history. Just look at the origins of the union movement, and look at the origins of the women's movement. Look at most of these movements have been tendentially left wing, or AKA progressive. Anyway, I got to let you go, because I've got a couple other callers and we're already only about 10 minutes away from the end of the show. But thanks, Richie. It was good to hear you.
Have a good day.
All right. So let's just go right to our next caller. I hope I was semi-coherent there. I don't know. It's hard to kind of think on your feet when you get into these political theoretical discussions. Harry, go ahead.
Oh, greetings, and thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I like when you have these open forums so we can talk about anything, and what you're talking about, too. I like to talk about the January 6th riot, and I think the government would have been overthrown if Black Lives Matter and Antifa, remember, did not show up. They were told not to show up because these people were here, so they didn't. Otherwise, it would have been a huge battle, and it probably would have been successful of turning, making Trump president again.
Well, that's interesting. How would you see? How would that have happened? How would you see that playing out?
Well, it would have been a lot more violent. I mean, if Black Lives Matter were there, and
a lot of people said that would have served as a pretext for Trump then calling out the military, which would have allowed then. Yeah, okay, that's where you're going, right?
Yeah, that's exactly. And thank God that the Black Lives Matter and Antifa didn't show. They were told to stay away, and they did. One of the main who should also be put on trial, hopefully, with Trump is Giuliani. I don't know if you remember the speech he gave right before Trump spoke. He said trial by combat. Well, what does that mean, trial by combat? That means go to the Capitol and fight.
Well, yeah, I mean, wait till the next round or two of these hearings. They're going to, as I was talking about the Willard Hotel war room where Giuliani was ensconced, that's all apparently going to come out. So they're definitely zeroing in on him for sure.
Yeah. But also, what's the end plan for these hearings? Now, I don't know how it's done, but like a special prosecutor, does the House vote for that, or does the president require that, or does the attorney general do it? Because one thing about our attorney general, because of what the Senate did for him and not becoming on the Supreme Court, people might think that, well, he has a grudge. That's why he's doing all this. So hopefully there'll be a special prosecutor.
So at what point in the Watergate thing, you know, they had the hearing, so what point was a special prosecutor appointed? Do you remember?
Yeah, I don't remember. Or the last one that we had, when they tried to impeach Trump, that was done by a special prosecutor. What was his name? A couple of years ago. Anyway, but yeah, I'm just wondering, how do we get a special prosecutor in? Is that the game in plan before the November 2nd election that's coming up? Should we do that before that? Because if the Republicans take power in the House and the Senate, you can scrap all this.
Yeah, well, an interesting question, of course, and obviously here in Oregon, it's always kind of different than a lot of other places in the country to talk about upcoming election season. But it will be interesting how, you know, both the overturning of Roe v. Wade and it's stirring up millions of women and others and allies of women in their struggle to keep their right to control their own bodies. But how that and these January 6th hearings will play in to the elections, because, you know, the drumbeat has been high gas prices, you know, the economy. And that's, of course, you know, if you watch any Fox News, they've just been hitting that over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, but it's 4 months away, the next election. So will people forget? I mean, the inflation, though, I don't think they will. These hearings, you know, four months from now, will they remember it?
No. I mean, it's still building, this thing. I mean, yeah. You know, it's just this is we're kind of at the midway point, if not at the beginning midway point. I mean, this is really. I think they've been very, you know, I actually am gaining some respect. I think they've been very canny. You know, it has been kind of very staged. You know, it's been very controlled for sure. But I think they've played their hand well so far on these hearings. And I think it's, I don't know, I guess the main thing is, you know, when Dean broke it open, then a lot of other people started to roll. So I think that's the kind of the wild card is, you know, who else is going to, you know, break this open further, I think is and what sort of more hard evidence do they actually have? You know, they just seized the phone. I'm sorry, I should have a better memory as a talk show host, but just a couple days ago, they swooped in on that Trumpist, was he a attorney, I believe, and seized his phone. Anyway. I'm going to let you go. We only have about less than 5 minutes left, Harry.
Okay, then. Thank you very much for taking my call.
All right. We have Kathy up next, and then maybe room for one more at 503-231-8187. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi, good morning. I love that conversation that you had with your first guest. it's a good deep conversation. Got some good points in there. So I have one thing that I really called about, but I want to make a very brief comment about the Roe versus Wade thing. If they're going to say that women can't have abortions, then I think the pushback should be, okay, if you really want to protect children's lives, then let's start by not selling weapons overseas that are killing children all over the world. So I don't want to get a discussion of that. What I did call was to say I'm down in Humboldt County, where I graduated college, Humboldt State University. I've got some things to do for a couple months here. But down here, there's a petition going around about cannabis, and we were talking about global warming issues. I don't know if many people are aware up in Portland, but the state of the cannabis industry right now is that very large growers are depleting the water tables, among other environmental damages that they're doing. And there's an initiative here in Humboldt to restrict new permitting to already existing numbers of permits, because the tobacco companies are coming in and wanting to do enormous grows, and the whole water system is not being well controlled. And already people's wells are drying up. So just a heads up, and this is also a controversy in the left community, because of course, you know, people think, oh, legalization, yay, that's all great.
Well, I remember when they first start, you know, they're doing the leading the drive towards legalizing marijuana completely in Oregon. There were people who start to raise the voice that it was almost inevitable in a capitalist system that the big corporations were eventually going to take it over. And, you know, you can look at psilocybin as a similar thing. And so that, yeah, that always leads back to the fundamental contradiction that we're facing, is that we live in a vicious capitalist system where money will rule regardless of our best intentions, and that we have to keep, and that's, you know, the left really grew up as a reaction to the capitalist system, and we've kind of tend to lose sight of that. And there's really still not much of an anti-capitalist, explicit anti-capitalist movement in any of the progressive movements. Anyway,
well, I agree. Yeah, I agree with that point. But also, when we were advocating for legalization, we just wanted it legalized. Instead of just legalizing it, they put in all these permitting systems and everything, which makes it very difficult, if not impossible, for the small-time grower to, you know, jump through the hoops and you know, get certified. Instead of just saying, okay, it's legal to grow marijuana with they put in a few things like the use of water, or the use, you know, they should be not allowing the pesticides, which is another big issue. But, you know, had they just made it a much simpler legalization, we again wouldn't have. But your point is absolutely correct, that, you know, that it's all about the money, and the money's going to get into, you know, this herb that for many people is wonderful. I haven't smoked for 12 years myself, and so there's another controversy. Is it the greatest thing for everybody?
Well, we'd have kind of gotten off the subject of January 6th, but that's okay. Flagging. I've been following that issue in Humboldt County. It's not just Humboldt County. I think Southern Oregon faces similar issues of water. And I mean they're you know, but the water issue is vast. And I guess what you're pointing out is that, you know, the marijuana issue, which it has been near and dear to the progressive community for, you know, certainly at least since the 60s. And if anybody's going to rise to the challenge of dealing with the water crisis, we should first deal with it in our own sector, is I guess sort of your point. And I totally agree, you know. And unfortunately, it's hard to get people united around any particular issue.
The nice thing about this is that it is something that somebody is actually doing. There is a legal effort. If you have friends in Humboldt, have them, call and support this, and then get them, sign this petition.
We got to run, Kathy.
Something we're actually doing. Yeah. All right.
Thanks for bringing that up. And I guess on that note, I got to get out of here. We are at the end of our time. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for more great programming here on KBOO. Bye bye.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m.